When you hear the music of Schubert, sometimes you forget that death is an enemy, says violinist Patricia Kopaczynskaya. In fact, on the recording, Schubert, Death and the Maiden with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, which just recently won a Grammy Award, she says by the end, death had become my friend. We'll explore that Grammy Award-winning recording this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Mocker. Well, Patricia, I wanted to start off by asking you about the Ojai Festival, which is coming up in June, and I know that you are you the artistic director for that festival?
Yes, that's right.
So you have a world premiere of a new project that's going to be happening at this festival. Let's talk a little bit about that and how it came about.
You know, I'm a simple soloist, so I play violin. Classical music is what I know or what I would like to explore. But I started to think that it's not enough. Now I'm 41 and I cannot neglect the fact that I'm a member of this society, a member of humanity, of our globe. So I cannot not think about environment, problems, political problems also. So I would like to stage it. I would like to question it in music, in my art understanding. So I started to think about how can I create a program which makes you think about what happens today and where are we going. There are actually many pieces about catastrophes and problems in our world in any time. This was the most inspiring thing. The strongest piece I ever heard in my life was the Dies Irae by Galina Ustvolska. This is the Russian composer. I thought this should be a piece of art in itself, all together, also involving somehow the audience, sending in the middle of the program seven trombones into the audience, playing one single note around the audience and torturing it with this note. And I thought about the end of the world, so the seven angels coming and telling us that this is now the end. Because I really feel we are moving on a dead street. There is no way if we don't rethink our way of life.
One of the reasons I was curious about this piece is because it is centered around death as a concept, and it got me to thinking about your Grammy Award-winning project with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, Death and the Maiden, and I was wondering if there was any connection there at all. Maybe they're completely different ideas around death then.
You know, our life, our thoughts, the programming of a concert is very much connected with everything, actually. I get inspired by everything, the connection between environment and death and other things which I find relevant to our time and to us. This is all something like mushrooms. The roots are all connected, but you don't see them. They're under the ground. You see only these mushrooms. And our program around the Schubert's Death and the Maiden, which we explored all together in the beginning of our work together with St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, was an incredibly inspiring moment. First of all, I was very much inspired by the people I worked with. These are extraordinary high-level musicians which are able to play anything. The strings of St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, I think, are one of really best in the world. So the way of interpretation, the way of the finding out which pieces we could put as comments between the movements, the so-called interludes, were all a result of a very fruitful togetherness. And it was just the beginning. You know, we played a fantastic tour in Europe after the recording, where we have grown in the quality, in our spirit. And I feel how much we have grown together. We are really one soul now. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful experience. Also not having a conductor with us, just being ourselves, having dialogues between us, sometimes we play with closed eyes, and I still feel every single musician with me together. It's like a dream.
I know that you created the string arrangement of this string quartet, Death and the Maiden by Schubert, and you made a comment, something like you were a group of soloists coming together to create this beautiful piece. Can you expand on that a little bit?
You know, when you have such incredible colleagues, you would like them to come to word as well. And in an arrangement for the string ensemble, you, of course, think about everyone. And I wanted to have as many colors as possible. So when I let my neighbor play the same melody I just played, I expect another color, another character, another person. And this worked very, very well. We experimented with that a lot. And actually, even during the tour, after the recording, we changed so many things. We are constantly developing this idea. And it's never the same. This is so, so great. It's like coming into a children's room and finding same toys, but inventing new games. So the recording was just a moment of this inspiration, but we are still on our way.
And this is a live recording from a live performance. So it is just, as you're saying, kind of one entity of what you've done together. Were you at all surprised when it was nominated for a Grammy Award and then won a Grammy?
Yes, I was surprised, because it's not a perfect CD. It's not something where you can show how great you are, but it's a CD which just documented a moment of a life of a very, very funny group of people. Creative, curious, and daring. Yes, we were very daring, because, you know, working in the classical music business, it is daring even not to wear shoes on stage, because people speak about it years long. It is such a frozen territory that you have to take risk and to be subversive, just to destroy a structure which is very disturbing for people who want to make music in the best sense, and not repeating every time the same. It's not only that we play every time the same pieces, it's that we also play these pieces every time in the same way, and people expect it. You know, like you go to the restaurant and you expect every time the same dish. So not more salt, not less pepper, every time the same. I mean, I'm sure everyone would get bored with it, no?
Unless it's fast food, right?
But we are not a fast food.
Right,
we are very slow cookers, and we have our specialities, and we are interested in fresh plants from our garden. And it's always depending of the sun, of the weather, of our mood. So every program is fresh cooked.
I want to talk about how you put this program together that is on the recording itself. And what inspired you to break up the quartet like that? Is that something that's considered controversial?
Well, for me it's controversial that we are playing all the time old pieces in the old way. This is controversial for me. To look for new ways, this is something very normal. And it should be welcome in every single venue and for every contributor and audience. And when I thought about Schubert, I imagined that I am a gallerist. So I'm going into a gallery, and I would like to see an exhibition which really touches me. And what I very much like as a consumer is to be surprised and to see juxtapositions. This is always good, also for our nerve system. You know, when you put one hand on the other and wait, let's say, 30 minutes, you don't feel it anymore. So you have to move it. It's always about refreshing our perception. This the same with the music or with pictures. When you imagine Mona Lisa in the Louvre, and you expect to see again this picture, but instead of this picture, you see a drawing of a child, you are quite shocked, but then you start to rethink maybe Mona Lisa. So I wanted to put Schubert together with other pieces about the same topic together in one, to make, let's say, a salad of known and unknown recipes. And we found out that there are also pieces from medieval time, for example, or Renaissance. And there are many associations when you hear this music. If you think about, for example, the second movement of Schubert's Death and the Maiden, you think, of course, of the song of Schubert. And then you think of pictures which were made when the Black Death came to Europe and destroyed half of Europe. And in that time, they had pictures with a death, with a skeleton, the dance of death. So these pictures were mostly on the walls of churches or cemeteries. These were the times of widespread illiteracy. So it was meant for people who couldn't read. They could only see pictures like comics, like children. Mostly these representations are series of some dozen of pictures, always one human being meeting and often dancing with his death, starting with the Pope, and then going down from Kaiser to Cardinal, King, Hermit, peasant, young man, maiden, child, and so on. So we were searching in the medieval times, and we found the dance with the death, the skeleton. And so we also used percussion, for example. It was incredibly fun. Also, I put a costume of a skeleton in our first concert. We were all very worried about critics, but but people were amazed. I think we shouldn't forget that also classical concerts are a part of entertainment. We also found out that there is a Byzantine chant. Why not to express the outcry of people towards God? Why do you do it? Then we started the first movement. And after it, we played Dowland Pavan, which contains the rhythm of the king's dance. Which was the structure of the second movement. So the variations of the slow movement explore different facets of the pavan part of the song, menace. Anger. The variation with the solo cello can be understood as the tender seduction of a shy virgin. The pavan, a dignified and formal Renaissance dance, was often danced by the king. It was also used in the music of mourning, for example, by Dowland. That's why we had all this association. So we put all together in one, and it became more than Schubert. It became a story which we were telling to the audience, and I found it so much more interesting than just playing the score.
And what reaction did you get from people who came to see these concerts?
Well, we were all overwhelmed, I think, musicians and listeners, because we were much more than musicians. We were part of an idea, and somehow it has so much more meaning. Yeah, it became very meaningful. We forgot about notes, traditions, rules. What is right, what is wrong. We were just making music, if not art.
Was there anything that was kind of surprising to you as you were putting this together?
Everything was surprising to us as well. You know, we were like students. We were learning from some, I don't know what. We were incredibly inspired, I would say. But I think nobody expected this kind of success because we were not out for success. We were just working on music, on the meaning of the music. And I think this is the best way also to success, if you want. Actually, as an artist, you have to question yourself every time you play a new piece. What is relevant to you now? And you tell then your own story. And don't be afraid to tell what you see in this score, in this music. Because it matters what you think. Otherwise, you can put any recording and you can listen it all your life, sitting in the kitchen, enjoying your coffee, but it doesn't have anything to do with life experience in a concert.
In your liner notes, you said that this is the idea of death as a friend and redeemer. Would you explain that a little bit more, please?
Well, hearing the music of Schubert, you sometimes forget that death is an enemy, as we consider it nowadays. We have tools to fight against death in hospitals, which were completely unimaginable in older times. People died immediately after birth. So one should know that in that times, people invited a priest when a woman gave birth. Just in case the child dies, it would be baptized as soon as possible, so it becomes an angel, because otherwise it would be not allowed to be buried in a cemetery. So death was something like a shadow of the life. People were dealing with death as an everyday thing. I don't think he was afraid of death. I think he was dialoguing with him. In this music, you can feel sometimes I thought I'm dancing with the death myself, somehow. And it became a friend in the end. It was very poetic. You know, music has so many layers, and it has so much more to say than words. So that you can actually imagine anything in music. It depends of your imagination. In the end, music appears in the imagination of the listeners. It's all in your head. We are just like a media. We are transmitting some information from other times, from other souls. But the arrival of the music is in your perception. And this is so fascinating to me because it has so many possibilities.
Is there a moment in this program as it exists on this recording that is kind of a favorite of yours or something that you just really look forward to?
I really love the second movement. This is the central piece of the recording. And I would say we also played it so, so well that I sometimes, I'm afraid to say, but sometimes I'm even proud to have done it in this way. But we are still developing. You know, I have the feeling that as more we play one piece, as more it opens, it opens its heart towards us. You know, every piece has a heart as well. It's not a paper and ink on it, and then the tradition, and it's an open map of many paths, and we just have to discover our paths, and there are always new things which you see, there is no end. Every time we play the Schubert, every time we discover a new dream. It's like to dream together, and sometimes it's wonderful, sometimes it's scary. But we are very courageous people.
That's new classical tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julia Bacher.